Welcome to the Hunger for Change podcast. Today we're joined by Gorgon and Melker, who are two feet experts. We discuss foot health, grounding, and movement. It's a little different than our previous episodes, but I was blown away by their expertise and how deep and important foot health is. At the core, they're advocating for a more natural and holistic lifestyle, and that's exactly what this podcast is about. Gorgon, with a sports science background, is an elite Olympic weightlifter and has taught fitness professionals for over a decade. Recognized globally for his expertise in modern foot issues, he's driven by a passion for human movement. Currently, he's guiding a groundbreaking study on foot shapes and the impact of contemporary shoes on human performance sustainability. Melker has a background as an elite athlete, playing tennis combined with passion for holistic health. Creating things that are positive for active people is close to his heart. Working towards change is not limited to his brand Wide Footwear, but also in the collaborative non-profit organization, The Shoe Effect, together with My Foot Function. Melker and Gorgon, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us. Thank you. Pleasure.
So first of all, what does health mean to each one of you?
Well, if I would start, I think health encompasses many different things. And if we're not going to be specific about what we're talking about here today, but I believe that there's a sphere of things within what we define as health that are important for human health, if we define it as such, right? And I believe nutrition, which you speak a lot about, is definitely a big part of this, right? Another is movement, right? Spirituality and community, I believe, are also integral parts of what it means for human health or a human to be healthy.
Yeah, and for me, I would say also, I think of it very holistically. I think a lot of society is where, okay, we focus on how to eat well, but then we forget about sleep and movement and other things. And some people only think about movement and then they forget about diet. So I try to think about all of these pillars and how important they are as a collective, because they are, I think to achieve human health, you cannot really budge on any of those.
Where are you guys from? Tell us a bit about your background.
Sure. So myself personally, I'm originally from Armenia. And I emigrated there with to Sweden, actually, with my parents about the age of 6 years old. And from an early age, I already had quite a big passion for movement. So after I graduated from high school here in Sweden, I moved to London, where I took my degree in sports science, specialized in biomechanics, which essentially means studying the human body under the laws of physics and how that moves, essentially, right? And during that time as well, I was competing and active in Olympic weightlifting. Through a series of unfortunate events, I sustained a lot of injuries, which unfortunately meant that I could not continue down that path. And that led me to moving back to Sweden, where I started educating personal trainers. So I started working as a teacher for personal training schools, and I did that for well over a decade. And along that path as well, I met one of my closest friends and colleagues, Joseph Stone, who is a co-founder of the My Foot Function company that we run together. And we went down this path and discovered the importance of feet through being on an education together, where we were learning about running technique and some other things. And even, both of us were kind of flabbergasted that we hadn't thought of that for, right? Teaching health and fitness, and never really thought about feet essentially and how shoes affect this. I wasn't even taught that during my sports science degree. Yes, we did go through the foot, but we never went through, okay, how does shoes affect foot form and function? So we were incredibly inspired. We thought, okay, nobody's talking about this, or very few people in the world are talking about this. So this is something we definitely need to go out with. So we started teaching this subject, holding seminars in around Sweden and the Scandic countries. And it showed quite quickly that it was something that was sorely needed by a lot of people, because a lot of people were seeking out that information actively through being let down by the more traditional methods that are available today. So that was a little short background of myself.
I mean, I was born in Sweden, but moved around quite quickly. So I grew up partly in Brazil, and early fell into the love for the sport of tennis. And that was like kind of played the big role in my life up until a couple of years ago when I ended my career, maybe 5-6 years ago. And I've always been very sporty, very interested in health in general. Moved around, lived in the US for a couple of years, where of course the health state isn't maybe not optimal with the diet and everything. And then quickly, in my tennis career, I actually always had a lot of foot pain, which I never really knew the answer to. So I, you know, you just assume that the shoes that are available are the best ones that exist, right? I mean, the big companies must know what the best shoes are for my feet. So I thought it was totally normal to have pain for three weeks before the shoes were broken in, and just down that path. And then a couple of years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago, when I first found the that there was an alternative, that's how me and Gorgon met back then. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
How did you guys meet? When did you start to work together?
Well, it's kind of interesting. So I learned about this term called barefoot shoes. And I was, you know, went kind of crazy with it. I ordered a bunch of pairs to try. I tried all the bigger brands. And then I was one day searching around this on Instagram. And I saw a post from this page called My Foot Function. And I thought, well, this is cool. It's not something I've never seen before. So I scrolled their feed, maybe checked out like 100 of their posts. And then I said, well, I want to learn more. So I contacted them and I said, I would like to book an online consultation. And they responded, sure. And we booked the time. And then when I went on their website again, I saw that it said that they were based in Gothenburg, Sweden, because I thought they were in the US or in England or something, which was obviously where I was as well. So I said, hey, why don't we just meet in person? And so then me and Gorgon, we met up and had our session in person. Mm-hmm. And it was super interesting, like eye-opening to me. He brought this plantar pressure plate. I could see exactly how my step was moving. He was analyzing my feet, how they looked and how they had been deformed over the years. And then at the end of the session, I asked him, so Gorgon, what shoes do you recommend that I wear? Because you have obviously tested everything. And it was kind of interesting because I noticed that he couldn't really give me a recommendation from the bottom of his heart. So he was kind of dodging the question. So that really made me think, and went home that same day. And we were speaking to my brother and we were basically saying, okay, we got to do something about this. And then, so we said, okay, let's try to make a shoe company. And hopefully one day, maybe Gorgon and the team at My Foot Function will actually like the shoe. And then 2 years later, we were done with the development of the shoe, and then we kind of met up again, and we were, yeah, the rest is history, and that's how we kind of like became friends, and yeah.
What is a barefoot shoe? It sounds weird to me. Or you're barefoot, or you wear a shoe. Is it like a mix?
Yeah, so it's a bit of an oxymoron, right? So you can't be barefoot in a shoe, essentially, right? But I think it's essentially what barefoot shoes try to do is mimic the sensation of being barefoot. That would include obviously having a very thin sole, so you have as close contact with the ground as possible, having a flexible sole as well, so there's no restriction to the natural movement and range of motion of the foot and the toes, but also having a toe box that is wide enough to accommodate all your toes in a fully loaded and splayed position.
I'm just curious, that sole, you say that's thin, but still, does it allow you to be grounded, or is it isolating your foot from the ground?
It will be isolating your foot from the ground. I mean, there are a few companies that do kind of grounding shoes or grounding sandals where they have wires connected from the inner sole towards the outer that allows you to gain benefits from this grounding principle.
Yeah.
But I think most shoes do not. And obviously the purpose of shoes and why we first as a species started to wear them is to protect our feet from extreme temperatures, right? And also harsh objects on the surface.
Yeah. Right.
But I do think that we would definitely all benefit, or most of us would benefit being barefoot more for grounding principles and others.
Yeah, I do what I can to walk as much barefoot as I can. Anywhere, at home, but also when I'm on vacation, I try to just take off my shoes. Mm-hmm. I actually saw on your Instagram, Melke, that you were doing some experiments with the grounding and measuring, right? The effects. So when you wear shoes.
Yes, I ordered a voltmeter to just try it and see it for myself, because I think grounding is very interesting. So it was a huge difference stepping on the grass without shoes and then with like the electrical connectivity. when we have tried the grounding shoes, that maybe there are some that works better, but the ones I've tried doesn't really seem to be as effective as maybe the marketing suggests. If we would ever do it in the future, I think we would have to have some kind of innovative system to make sure that it actually works. Because I think a lot of it can be a gimmick. Maybe I'm wrong, there are some that works, but I've seen it with my own eyes at least.
Okay, interesting. You know, in summer in Sweden, we tend to wear these trätofflor, you know, the wooden shoes. So what about those? You being a grounding expert, Melker, do they still ground you or are they isolating your feet?
It's a good question. I think the theory is that that wet wood will actually conduce electricity, right? Which is why you say that if, for example, it has been raining and you can walk on like your porch and it's made of wood, you will might get some grounding, you know, but I don't know how that translates into wooden shoes. Do you have any?
I wouldn't be able to say. Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on the thickness and if the material has been glazed with some other material.
I read the book Born to Run, and I understand that you brought this concept to Sweden. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, so me and Joseph, we were first of all educated by a guy called Lee Saxby. He's an English guy. So he's been our mentor from the start, holds a lot of wisdom and knowledge within this field and has kind of been the forefront figures to this whole kind of barefoot revolution, if you will. Yeah. And he actually coached and met up with Christopher McDougall, who's the author of Born to Run. But anyways, after meeting Lee Saxby, that's where we got this inspiration from. And we actually started holding his educations within the Scandic regions. So we had a good close partnership for quite so many years. And then he went on his own path. We went on our own path. And that's where kind of my foot function was born, where we try to expand this and try and educate, where our goal is really to try and provide high quality, reliable, good information, easily accessible to people globally in terms of what you can do to improve your health.
So for our listeners who have no idea what Born to Run is about, could you summarize the concept?
Do you mean in terms of the book or the education or just in terms of that kind of term?
The book.
Right. So the book, authored by Christopher McDougall, is about a journey this reporter took to Mexico, to the Copper Canyons, where there is a tribe called the Tarahumara Indians. And they are very well known for being able to run very long distances on very rough terrain using sandals made out of car tires or just completely barefoot. And there's been instances of even the women in the villages who are also very good runners joining a marathon run just to collect some money for the village, just coming there with their kind of regular dress clothes and just beating everybody, right? So it's been quite inspirational to listen to their and hear about their story. And I think that's what Christopher McDougall was inspired by as well. And that's what the book was about, essentially, and trying to tell this story through the Tarahumara Indians about how we as a species have essentially evolved to run, right? We are very good at running long distances.
Exactly. That's something I remember from the book. I found it amazing that humans are the animal with the most endurance. No animal on earth can run as long as we can, right? So to hunt animals, we just ran and ran until the animal fell to the ground. A lot of people have no idea that we can run for days.
No, that's very true. Yeah, we're so detached from that origin of our species that
we've
forgotten it for sure.
Yeah.
During your experience with obstacle races, you mentioned noticing certain things like movement patterns. Would you mind expanding on this?
Sure. So myself and Joseph, we, you know, we're very passionate about movement. And what we noticed, how we got into this obstacle course racing is that we noticed that there's a lot of events, movement type of events catered for young people and then adults individually, but nothing that you can kind of do as a family. And we believe that it's very important to cultivate a culture within the family where movement is a pillar, right? It's an integral part of family culture, because that's what, that, as we know, is one of the pillars of health, what cultivates health and also community and well-being. So we created this family race where the parents, the children, the grandparents could join together and run. And obviously, when you start observing all these kind of age groups running through these various types of obstacles, is what you immediately notice is how nimble and how easy the kids kind of travel through, and how awkwardly a lot of the adults kind of try and get through the obstacles. And this just shows that how, you know, over time and through being subject to the modern environment that doesn't necessarily encourage a lot of variation in movement, we get very stiff and unable to move as we were intended to, essentially.
Could you take us through a simple guide onto foot health? What are the main pillars? Bone, muscle, etc.?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that we tend to view the foot as a separate part of the body. But what we have to realize is it's in its, if you break it down, it's made of essentially every, muscles, tendons, bones, ligaments, etc., which the rest of your body essentially is made up as well, if you're talking about the movement system, right? So when we talk about health in the rest of the body, whether it's the upper body, the legs, and the hips, we know intuitively, and we know through science and research, that moving these parts is very important for health, right? The same applies for the foot. And one of the worst things that you can do to your body and your foot is to trap it in an environment where it can't move, right? So obviously, we know that if we sit in a chair for 8-12 hours a day for several years, we're going to have some movement related issues, right? If you close your foot into a narrow confined space where you can't move your toes, you're most likely going to develop issues. So simply put, that number one rule we would say is to eliminate the factors that lead to poor health in your foot and also body, hopefully. And then from there, you could discover through trying to move your foot in an unrestricted environment what limitations you may have. And through that discovery and educating yourself, you may learn what things that you can do in terms of exercises maybe and other tools to keep improving your foot health.
So in modern society, how do healthy feet look like?
So a healthy foot is first and foremost defined by the shape. This is a kind of foundational principle in biology, is that form follows function, or shape determines the function, right? So the shape of a healthy human foot is kind of, if you imagine from the heel towards the forefoot, it's fan shaped, so it only gets wider. But to make it more simpler for the viewers, for example, if you take off your socks and shoes and just be completely barefoot and look down to your feet, and if you just extend your toes upwards, what you'll notice is hopefully these tendons that run along the top of the foot. Those tendons, they run parallel to what we call the metatarsal bones, these long bones that lead to the toes. And the functional position of each and every toe is that they should continue in a straight line from those tendons or bones. So that can give a quite an easy reference point to everybody, because a lot of people have variations in foot width and shape as to what position your toes should have naturally.
And I would also add that most people would look down at their feet and not see that pattern in our experience, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
That optimal pattern.
When you say most people, is that about 80% or more?
I would say from my personal experience in modern societies, probably more, 95% of people would probably have a degree of deformities from very mild to very severe. A lot of the times it's very unnoticeable for us, because the way we are used to seeing feet in modern society, a lot of the times is narrower than it should be, and the toes aren't as splayed as they should be. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that clear reference point as to what a healthy natural foot looks like, then you're like, okay, yeah, well, everyone's foot looks like that, so that should be a normal healthy foot, right?
All right. But
if we dig deeper and we look at the studies that have actually been done on indigenous barefoot people in different parts of the world, we can see that this is not the case, right? And where the toes typically follow a straight line from the metatarsal bones, as we mentioned before.
So in modern society, is that because of the shoes we wear?
Yeah, that's correct. So it is the number one factor in causing foot deformities, because most shoes if you observe from where your forefoot, your toe joints lie, towards the toes, they will always taper in towards a point in the middle. But in a healthy foot, from that point, so from the toe joints, that forefoot pad, towards the toes, it should really only get wider, but all should get narrower, right? So the two most common foot deformities we see today is bunions or hallux valgus. So that's where the big toe is pushed against the second toe, and hammer toes, where the lesser toes are curled up against each other.
I'd
also add that to what Gorgon said before, that we kind of think of the foot as a separate thing, not very connected to the rest of the body. So I've always, you know, just put my foot into the tennis shoe or running shoe and you just hope for the best. But when I learned from Gorgon and other experts that the way the foot actually is shaped and how it works actually, I mean, affects your performance and the rest of your body, I almost got a little bit upset, you know, thinking like, okay, how fast could I be if my foot was perfect? How good of a tennis player could I have been? How high could I jump? How would my mobility be? So I think in this discussion, we have to also think of it as from a holistic perspective, where the foot is optimal, like Gorgon very greatly explained, but then like, how does that affect also the rest of the body and performance and health and balance? And there's an abundant of things that we can talk about.
You do see people run barefoot, but you never see people playing tennis barefoot, right?
No. And, you know, I would say there that, you know, it's important to mention that shoes and certain athletic shoes do serve a functional purpose, such as sprinting shoes, football cleats, even tennis shoes. But something that serves absolutely no purpose in terms of function is that they all have a narrow toe box.
Mm.
Have a rigid sole does serve a function, that you have more, you know, stability and you create a rigid foot or a more propulsive force, so greater push-off force. But what the common factor which most shoe developers get wrong is the toe box, unfortunately.
I remember running the Chicago Marathon a few years ago, kilometer 39 or so. We had about 3 minutes left to go, and there was this guy appearing behind me. He was running barefoot, and he was running faster than me. I was really impressed by that because I'd never seen someone do this before. I guess it's getting more and more popular, right?
Yeah.
Isn't there also the Aborigines in Australia? They have been running barefoot, and they have, you know, these speeds of like close to Usain Bolt, from what I
heard. Yeah, so there's, I mean, in Africa and Australia, you have these indigenous people that are still living that kind of hunter-gatherer lifestyle and still have this capacity to run very fast as well, even though that's probably not the thing that they do most of the time, but they have incredible elasticity, power, and strength. A good example is if you watch, I forget their name, it's this African tribe that does this traditional dance where they're jumping. I'm sure... Mm-hmm. You've probably seen that on YouTube, but they jump so incredibly. They're so bouncy, right? They're just incredible beat that they jump to, really fast and really elastic. And that's something that we have lost as well and don't often incorporate into training either. And it's an integral part of foot health and function as well. Apart from having a strong, healthy foot, it should be very elastic as well because it's simply a spring system, right?
And wearing shoes, that elasticity, you lose it, right?
Yeah, so elasticity is something you naturally lose over time as you age, but it's something that you can definitely maintain, and something that is definitely not going to help your elasticity is restricting the ability of not just the toes to move, but the arch of the foot.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
Because that's where the spring system, a big part of the spring system is related to the foot specifically.
Then what would you say is foot health's worst enemy?
I think, shoes. The probably the biggest evil is modern footwear. Yes.
So how come foot fashion is so different from the ideal foot? Why do people designing shoes have such a different idea from what the foot requires?
Yeah, there's a long history behind development of the modern shoe and its shape. But I think inherently it comes down to that we tend to view things that, you know, naturally we like symmetry, right? Symmetry is what defines if someone looks good or something looks bad, etc. So early on in the 14th, 15th centuries, they started developing these kind of pointed shoes, most likely for that purpose. And there's other kind of cultural reasons in different societies around the world why this occurred. But I think it has something to do with that. But the development of that kind of toe box shape is something that is born completely out of fashion. And is nothing that serves any functional purpose other than showing that you're of a certain status in society, right? Mm. If we go back into history. And since then, because this has become such a staple norm within society and what we're used to seeing, and it's kind of developed over hundreds of years, it's something we stop questioning. It becomes kind of a normal part of your life. Mm-hmm. And something that seems normal, and what is normal can be often confused as what is natural, if you know what I mean. And I think that's what's led us to this point in time. But also there's a lot of confusion when you look into the current scientific literature, especially between the late 60s towards the 90s. A lot of research was done looking at rear foot, so the back part of the foot, and postural faults. Okay. Occurring there, and then trying to fix this through the use of orthotics or certain shoes, and very little attention was put onto the toes and their function and the shape, even though there's a lot of good, really old research stemming back from even the 17th century from many famous and well-known professors in anatomy and physiology that showed early on there the detrimental effect narrow pointed shoes can have on the shape of the foot and thereby the health and function. That's kind of been buried and forgotten under the sand, unfortunately. For some reason, you know, there's people, even foot professionals, that are questioning the need for this kind of wide toe box, but it's to us it's pretty obvious.
So what role does lifestyle play in foot health? We talked about the shoe itself, but what about nutrition, being outdoors, training, all those lifestyle factors?
They play a massive role, absolutely. Because one thing we have to realize is that if you're not spending enough time on your feet, so if you have a very sedentary lifestyle and you say change to barefoot shoes, but you're spending maybe 1 hour a day on your feet, not much is going to happen to the shape or function of your feet. Our bodies are stimulated to adapt through imposing a certain type of demand, right? Which is weight, gravity on top of these structures. So they start to reshape themselves. So having movement is obviously an integral part, and nutrition as well, because as we know that when we are moving, we need appropriate nutrition and healthy nutrition to fuel the body to repair itself and to adapt. Same thing applies for the foot, right? It's not a different part of the body. It's an extension of our body. The requirements for a healthy foot is as much as the requirements for a healthy body and a healthy mind.
So what is the biggest challenge you tend to face when working with people and their foot health journey?
There are several, but one of the biggest challenges for a lot of people is making the necessary change in terms of footwear. That it's aesthetically... for them too big of a jump, and they're not willing to make that change because they feel that they will look ugly or that they're just not used to it. And a lot of them take some time to make that change. Some of them still keep wearing these type of shoes, even if they know that it's not good for them, which can be okay then and then, depending on what problems you have. But that's probably one of the biggest issues that for not all people, because a lot of people that reach out to us are in pain. And when you are in pain, you will make most sacrifices to get out of pain. Mm. And once you discover and get used to wearing these types of shoes that are more foot shaped and allow your toes to spread, two things happen mainly. One, you get used to that feeling. So going back to the old shoes almost is unbearable. And two, something that is also very interesting is that you get used to the look of the shoe, because we have to realize that our visual perception of shoes is very distorted of what is actually good looking, because just because that narrow toe box is visually good looking now, it's usually because you're just used to seeing that so much. Yeah. But as I usually say, sometimes, you know, when you get to know a person, you know, they look beautiful on the outside, and then you see their personality is not as beautiful, and then you don't see them as beautiful anymore. So if you know what the shoes are doing to your feet, then you quite quickly are able to change people's mind on that.
Yeah, and I would also add to that that I don't know how many times we've heard exactly that from customers, right? That they, we got this nice lady wrote us an email the other day. She said that when I first got the shoes, I was laughing at them because they looked funny. But now they look pretty to me and I can't walk in anything else. And I just bought a second pair. So I think that's the journey for a lot of people. Certainly was for myself as well. You know, your eye, for us, I think we talked about this the other day, that when we look at the normal shoes nowadays, we almost think they look weird. And we think our shoes look, you know, more... more normal to us. So it's a mindset shift.
So in general terms, what happens when feet health deteriorates?
So it's a cascade of things, but what we have to realize first of all is that our feet are our foundation, right? So any clever engineer, if they're going to build a vertical structure, an upright structure, knows that the foundation is the most important thing, right? The same applies to the human body. We're a vertical structure. We're relatively very unstable as a species compared to other animals that will move on four legs, right? And this is why it takes human beings several years or close to a year or more to start standing and walking, and 2, 3, 4 years to start the skill of running, because it's a very skillful, unstable movement, which requires, you know, very good base of support, which is our feet, to be able to support ourselves in all these dynamic types of movements. So once you crumble that foundation, or you kind of limit that foundation, the rest of the body is going to suffer. So we see a lot of issues all from all the way from the ankles all the way to the neck. You will see issues related to the foot. There's many various ones, but the typical most common ones we'll see is knee and hip and lower back issues as a result of poor foot function and posture.
You know, in health, we always look for the root cause, because only addressing the symptoms that really help you. So how does this translate into foot health? How can you find out what is really going on? What is the root cause?
So to make it as simple as possible, I believe, because maybe not everyone has access to a foot expert or to visit someone like myself, maybe, or Melker. But I think through the process of elimination, right? So if you believe your shoes are causing your issue, or I believe most of the times that is, you can eliminate that type of shoe, not necessarily go barefoot, but acquire a healthier, more foot-shaped, wider shoe. And see if that makes any changes in your symptoms, right? Or just try going more barefoot for a lot of people before making an investment in shoes, and see if that doesn't help whatever symptoms you're experiencing. However, I would say, and add a caveat there, is that it depends very much on your age and your foot health at the current point in time, because there is sometimes a greater risk for certain people to going barefoot directly.
Yeah.
There is a requirement to do some exercises and preparatory work before that, because of the length of time and the degree of dysfunction that foot has acquired. Mm. And this is where I think a lot of the misconceptions, myths, and skepticism around barefoot shoes come, is partly, you know, after that Born to Run book was released and this Harvard study that showed running barefoot can improve your running technique, et cetera. A lot of people started running barefoot. And as a consequence of that, a lot of people went to doctors and physiotherapists with stress fractures in their feet.
So you would have to build up your feet little by little, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Hmm.
It takes time. So imagine spent decades squishing your feet into shoes, you expect them to suddenly cope with the amount of force that you're talking about in running. And just to give people an example of how much force your foot has to deal with, if we're looking at running, for example, it's 3 up to 5 times your body weight per step, right?
Yeah.
So if you weigh 80 kilos, take that times 5 times the amount of steps you take under a run, it's thousands of tons of force, right? So if your foot is going from that to suddenly, it's like trying to sprint right after taking your cast off when you've got a broken leg.
That's a lot, 3 to 5 times your body weight. What part of your body suffers the most?
Do you mean when running barefoot too soon or?
No, I mean just running in general. Is it your foot, your knee?
The part of the body that takes most impact, do you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it'd definitely be the foot.
The foot, yeah, more than your knee.
Yeah, so the amount of impact your knees will take is determined by your foot function, the ability of the foot to absorb that
force, absorb.
Also your technique, right? So if you say you have perfect technique, but you know, you take one runner with very rigid feet that can't absorb that force, they're most likely going to have shin splints, knee issues, or have at least a higher degree of risk to acquiring these type of injuries, whether compared to a runner or an athlete that has a more supple or more mobile foot that can absorb that force, they will be able to get away with it a lot easier, right? And be able to absorb those forces a lot easier.
Interesting. So the absorption is what's important here.
Yeah. So I think they even calculated this in a study. I can't remember the name, but in the plantar fascia, so this big tendon that runs from the heel bone towards the toes, which is essentially an extension of the Achilles tendon, around that area, we absorb about 17% of the impact forces, and the Achilles tendon about 32%. Quite a lot of force that is absorbed there if you just look at the ankle and the foot, right? Right. And if you're talking about 5 times your body weight per step, 32%.
It's a lot. You said most people in modern society can improve their foot health, right? You said 95%. What would you say are the first steps towards restoring our feet?
So the first step, I believe, is an elimination process, like I mentioned before, is taking away the factors that led to where you are now. So it's most likely going to be the shoes. Another thing is taking a look at your movement habits, right, during the day and what movement practice you're engaged in. And then if you do have more severe issues, which sometimes are not often solved by just going barefoot or getting better shoes, it'd be very recommended to start educating yourself about this. So a good way to do this is just follow us on Instagram. We have a lot of free educational content, but I understand that can oftentimes be very overwhelming for people as well, but we do offer consultations for this as well. We have a global map of instructors that are certified by us as well, which you can find if you want a physical meeting instead through our instructor map. So those are some certain ways, but the first thing to do is just get rid of the factors that has led to that point. Start spending a bit more time barefoot, see how your foot responds. Look at our page, start doing some simple exercises, which we have available on Instagram. And for most people, that's going to go a long way, right? Just getting better shoes, exercising your feet, and just spending progressively more time barefoot or in functional footwear.
And also, I would say be patient with it.
Yes.
And don't expect it to have completely transformed in 3 or 4 days. I would say, like, invest in a pair of shoes, give them 30 days, give them 60 days, walk in them, and then try to put your foot in your old shoes, and you're probably not going to want to even. It's typically what we hear from customers. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned your company, Gorgon. Why don't you tell us more about Foot Function and what your mission is as a company?
So our mission as a company is to provide high quality information that is as science-based as possible, and make it as freely available for people to take part in and to, so that it can have an impact on their health. That is really what our passion is. And obviously we want to make a living from this. So we do offer services as well, if you would like to learn more. So our company, we have a lot of online educations to help people educate themselves, to do self-assessments. And then through these self-assessments, you can learn what areas of your foot needs to be worked with. And then within these online educations, you can find a series of progressive programs and exercises to improve different aspects of foot health, whether it be if you have bunions, plantar fasciitis, or other issues. There are specific workshops for this as well. So that is our kind of main mission and goal. As I kind of got into there as well, that we're trying to keep it as scientific as possible in terms of, okay, you know, within the scientific literature available today, there is research done on foot exercises, but it's quite limited. And it's on exercises that we believe are a good start, but don't go far enough for a lot of people. We know through years of doing plantar pressure plate assessments and assessments at our clinic that we, you know, we have the research in our experience, in our practical experience, and we know the effect that these exercises have. And really, you don't need to look that far, because we know through research on other parts of the body, when we apply strength training, mobility training, et cetera, that it has a positive response. So you don't need to think that far to think that the foot would also have a positive response from that kind of progressive training. But it needs to be done a bit more specifically, depending on the compensation you have in your feet. So this is what we focus on within our company, to be able to provide this high quality information and education, and also provide the tools that may be necessary for some people to improve their foot health and function.
So your customers, let's say they've been suffering with abnormalities with their feet for years, are they reversible?
Yes, it depends on the degree of deformity. So most, if not all, are improvable to a big degree. Right, especially if you haven't done any foot exercises or moved your foot at all or changed your shoes, you can make massive improvements regardless. I mean, I've worked with people in their 80s with arthritis, really rigid toes, and they have made improvements, right? So if you're still relatively young, don't have any severe deformities, you can definitely make massive improvements and regain full functionality of your feet.
Yeah. So what are the star products and tools that can help people improve their foot health?
I think the we offer a package which is called the Starter Package, which I think is ideal for most people. So we'll include our most popular workshop called Fix Your Feet. Within there, we have a big range of exercises that meets most people's needs, and you also get the tools included for this. So it's resistance band to train your toes. It's a massage tool, and it's toe separators to put them in their functional position. Yeah.
So how much time would you need to start seeing improvements?
I would say that if you haven't trained your foot before, you'll see immediate improvements after a few sessions already. And you'll notice quite a lot of change within the first few weeks. Mm. It's kind of those newbie gains, you know, when people go to the gym first time, haven't touched a weight, they improve quite quickly. It's the same thing with the foot. If it's in such a weakened state and you provide it some stimulus in form of strength training, it's going to adapt pretty quickly. And then after some time, you plateau, and that's where you need to go into progressively more advanced exercises. But most people will notice quite a lot of change quite early on, actually.
So, Melker and Gorgon, do you have any big future projects that you can share with us today?
No, I mean, what we have between the companies, of course, we have a shared interest of making an impact in the industry. I mean, changing the way people view feet and how shoes look and helping the lives of people, really. That's what it comes down to. And we realize that there is an opportunity to show this on a bigger scale and actually take information with modern equipment to the next level. So we have a co project between the two companies called the Shoe Effect that we will be basically studying over 1,000 people, do the largest ever study on the shoe's effect on feet. Spending a month in Sri Lanka, so we'll be studying both people that live in the cities and wear shoes, probably Western shoes, and then we'll also be studying the rural population, where people maybe have never even worn a shoe ever in their life, and then compare the difference and see what conclusions we can draw from that, and also how it affects, you know, movement and how their lifestyle is. Are they out in nature? Can they sit in the deep squat? How's their balance? How does their foot look? And yeah, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, so essentially it's a comparative study. And it's going back to what I was talking a bit about before, about the available scientific literature out there. There's two studies that are similar to what we're doing. One is done in 1905, so over 100 years ago. And they compared barefoot populations in Africa and then in some Western Asian countries, shoe-wearing population. And then one in 2009 between Dutch people and Indian barefooted people. So, and relative, I mean, respectable sample size, about 200, 250 people involved in the study, but still different ethnic groups. So there is still that argument today whether or not shoes are the main cause of foot deformities today. So we essentially want to put the nail in the coffin and say, look, here is the proof, kind of. So that's why we want to have a big sample size, 1,000 people, look at the same ethnic group, and hopefully do this in certain other continents around the world. But as Melker was saying there as well, be able to correlate this and see a relationship between foot shape and if they're experiencing any pain or discomfort or their quality of movement. And apart from that, which I think is a big thing as well, is trying to provide the scientific community, especially people that work within this profession, a clear guideline and clear definition and criteria of what wide shoes are. I'll hear from so many clients, oh, my orthopedic surgeon or my physiotherapist recommended wide shoes, so I got these wide shoes, and I look at them and they're just not wide enough, there's still that tapered toe box. So it's a very ambiguous kind of term, there's no clear definition.
Interesting.
So through this study we want to make that clear definition as well. What is a functional toe box, right?
Yeah, that's so interesting. Usually in this podcast we talk about nutrition, and when it comes to nutrition there are so many myths surrounding. For example, saturated fats, are they good? Are they bad? We heard for 60 years that they're bad for you. Turns out that that's what we should eat. We should not eat these seed oils. And so what about your industry? Are there any typical myths?
Yeah, there are quite a few typical myths. I mean, the most common ones would probably be that bunions or foot deformities like bunions and hammer toes are genetic. You acquire them from genetics. Now, there are genetic predispositions, so genetic factors that will make you more susceptible, so that you will acquire them more easily compared to the next person. And this is, for example, if you're born with very wide feet compared to the next person, you're obviously going to suffer a lot sooner due to those narrow toe box shoes that we have. Or if you have hypermobility, so if your joints are very mobile, they're easily influenced by their environment, right? So these are genetic factors, but the root causes, again, is the shoes. And that's a very common myth that we hear. And it's very easy to understand why people believe that as well, because, okay, I think how what my dad, if my mom and dad had it, for example, my grandparents had it, then obviously it's genetic, right? But look at the shoes that they had, right? And oftentimes we put these shoes on our kids from a very young age, essentially as soon as kids can start walking and standing, we put these ridiculous shoes on them that look like cute kind of Converse or Nikes or whatever, which not only impacts the development of the foot, but it also impacts the development of their motor skills. So their ability to move with quality.
When it comes to nutrition, these myths are backed by an industry that's making lots of money from them. Is there anything like this when it comes to feet?
Most definitely, yes. So, you know, Melker was saying in the beginning, I believe, you know, where, you know, all these major brands like Nike, Adidas, etc., they have quite a lot of money. And we know for a fact that they have done a lot of biomechanical research, and they know, most of them, that these narrow toe box shoes are not good for us. We are kind of to blame as well in that we purchase these shoes. I mean, those brands have even tried to come out with their version of functional shoes, but they didn't sell very well. So the market demand is still for these narrow toe box shoes, which are more aesthetic pleasing for the majority. So it's that evil cycle, right? So we have to try and get ourselves out of it. And the only way, I believe, is through education.
Yeah.
Contributing to the scientific literature, which is why we're on this joint project together as well.
Yeah, and I would also add to that, because I think education is the majority of the thing here. But I also think that if we want to be able to compete with what the kids like, with the cool Nikes or the cool Adidas, then we need to offer an alternative that is not ugly to be able to make shoes that are actually good looking. And that's something that, of course, I spend all my time thinking about, trying to make, like, for example, now we're working on a sneaker that hopefully comes in the next couple of months.
Really?
That we hope that like a 16-year-old can look at and think, okay, that's the coolest shoe that I've ever seen in my life. Because it's very I can understand, like, if you're 16 years old, even if you're 25 years old, and you see like the coolest new Nike shoe, and then you're comparing it to something like a barefoot shoe, it's not a very appealing switch.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to try to bridge that gap a little bit. And to I remember, like Elon Musk said when he was making Tesla, he was saying, we cannot just make the best electric car, we have to make the best car, period. Mm. That's how we can compete. And that's how I mean, I look at what we do at Wide is that, like, we don't want to just make the best barefoot shoe or best functional shoe, like we like to call it. We just try to need to make the best shoe. And that's like aiming for the stars, and hopefully we can at least land on the treetops, you know, like trying to bring that to the people. So
great. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I think we covered a lot of things. I could go on a tangent about many more things, but I think we covered the most important aspects.
I think, like, in general, because I mean, Gorgon has been working with this for over a decade, right? And I've been in this for 2 or 3 years. And I think 3 years ago, I was where a lot of people listening am today. And I think one thing that those people should remember is that we have to kind of break out of this thing where we just think everything is normal with what we're wearing on our feet, and that there might be something behind there that should be changed, and that we should give that a chance, because you don't really know what's on the other side of that courageous move to at least try it. Because I mean, I of course have a shoe company now. I genuinely cannot wear any other shoe now. And that's if I would want to do it, I would do it. But if I go out for a walk, or if I go to the gym, or if I go out running, like I simply can't put my feet back into the old shoes that are now collecting dust in my apartment. So it's I would just say give it a chance, see where you end up. It's not a huge. You can always go back if you for some reason don't like it.
I mean, it's almost like going from a you know, processed fast food diet, and then doing a good healthy diet for some time, feeling a lot better, and then asking that person to go back to that.
Go back.
Yeah, it's impossible to go back.
I haven't heard from anyone who regrets trying like, oh, I should never have started working on my feet, or I should never have changed my shoes to the better. It's just unheard of. Because it's a very good analogy that you
have. Yeah.
One thing I would like to add there, just to kind of put out as well, it's an important thing where there's a lot of people, you know, looking at barefoot shoes today, so-called barefoot shoes. A lot of people look for, okay, is it thin and flexible? The sole, that is by far not the most important criteria. What I want the listeners to take home from today in terms of the most important quality in the shoe is the shape and the width of the toe box, that it should accommodate all your...
The shape and the width, okay.
Yes. Everything else is secondary, and it depends on your foot health, function, age, etc.
Sport, a lot of things.
So where can people find you?
So My Foot Function, personally, we have myfootfunction.com, which is our main website. We also have an Instagram account, myfootfunction. And you're welcome to reach out to us there or through our website, and where we have a chat service if you want to talk to us directly as well and ask any questions.
Yeah, and same thing for us. You can find us at Instagram, Wide Footwear, and also widefootwear.com. Wide with a Y, not an I.
So Melker and Gorgon, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us on, Nicholas.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Hunger for Change podcast. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I also wanted to take a moment to talk about Naturally, my brand of healthy food products. At Naturally, we are on a mission to change the world through what we eat. This is why we worked so hard to make products that are delicious and also good for you. They're all gluten-free, have no refined sugars, no sweeteners, and no additives. My personal favorites are the cheesy snacks, chocolates, and cacao hazelnut spread. We also have cookies, granolas, nut bars, nut butters, and protein powders, as well as many cool snacks to be released soon. At the moment, Naturally is only available in Europe. However, we're working to expand to other continents, so stay tuned. If you're in Spain, you can head over to our website, naturally.com, and it will take you to our online store. And if you're in Italy, Portugal, Germany, Poland, France, the Netherlands, or in Sweden, you can find them on Amazon. Search for Naturally. I will leave you all these links in the description anyway, so that you can find them. Thank you so much for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.